Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from downtown Nicosia. And with me, via Zoom, I have Joe Evan Caspier, who is in... Tell me where you sit, where you live.
The memory of Jacob. Rothschild, who was one of the... who bought land 120, 40 years ago here, where so Jews could settle in Palestine.
Okay, Joe is a member of the Women Waging Peace Movement in Israel, and she's also an educational and developmental psychologist. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Magda. Thank you for inviting me.
And to let the to introduce you to the listeners, you tell me a little bit about yourself. Even you talk to the listeners about yourself. Okay. Who is Joe?
Is an ex, a dual citizen, actually. I grew up in the United States in a privileged Jewish home. It wasn't very Jewish, a home whose my grandparents were Jewish and did something with their Judaism. My parents were totally assimilated Jews. I did not even go to Sunday, to any kind of Sunday school. I got no religious education, but because of my last name, which was Silverstein, which is now translated into Evan Caspi, that's Hebrew, and Cohen was my on the other side, I knew I was Jewish, but it was a cultural thing and barely that. I went to college like all Americans. It was the time of Vietnam, and America was struggling with its moral crisis. Actually in my home, my mother, it was a divide. My mother was, anti-Vietnam and very, she was a very strong woman. And my father was kind of a liberal who more kept to the government. It was, you know, well, maybe, but there's a side of it. So, and I see those things reflected in my personality today. I still see myself in Women Wage Peace. I'm kind of like more like my father. I'm not the first one at the barricades. I'm very involved with finding the common voice. But to continue my story, I went to college in those days, and I found where I went rather confining. I was in the Midwest. I felt like I didn't know the world. So I felt like going away, and I organized for myself a half a semester abroad. And because I was doing political science, I also had studied Russian in junior and high school, I thought about Russia, the Philippines, or Israel. And what worked out was Israel, because there were all kinds of people trying to get us here, and it was just easy to come. And I came to a very left-wing kibbutz, and I learned Hebrew. I was 20. And then I went back to America and tried to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. It was really a crisis period of waking up and seeing who I wanted to be. And
I think, Joe, that a lot of us, our age group, grew up in very... tumultuous periods, because there was a lot of movement. I mean, I grew up in apartheid South Africa. So being active, and I had a father that kept to the system because he went to a place that helped him fulfill his dreams of what he wanted for his family. But I also had a family that couldn't control my activism. I think part of them admired it because I had the luxury of being able to be out there and expressive. But I was also probably quite so motivated, they knew they couldn't control me even if they wanted to.
So it's very similar. See, by telling my story, we see how much we have in common.
Exactly
that. And I actually felt the luxury of growing up in this upper middle class Jewish suburb of New York City, with educated parents. There were no financial problems. It was post-World War II. I think there was 1 minute in my childhood where the Cold War, a minute of being afraid, and that was it. We were safe. And I looked at my life at 20 and said, what am I going to do? What's the purpose of being here? And I came back to Jewish values. And I said, Tikkun Olam. I don't know if you know what that is. It means fixing the world. It's a very basic precept in Judaism. That the purpose of being, God put us here to help make the world better.
Yes.
And to bring the Messiah in the sense of making a time when the world will be harmonious. That's the purpose of being a human being.
I like that definition, that the Messiah is actually not a person that is the way he's often depicted, but rather a state of mind. state of being.
Right. So that was, was one half of what I said. And the other thing was, because I was going through a crisis, is okay, I want to be happy. I have to be here. I guess I need to try and make myself happy. And those two principles, I always talk about them. This is what led me to do everything I've done in life and consciously from the age of 20. The part about myself and being happy led me in the end to psychology. The part about Tikkun Olam, fixing the world, said, well, I'm Jewish. And it was a time in America where people, there was a whole conflict about, whether you were a particular something or you were just American. And so I came to Israel and I identified, and all the Israelis said, well, come to Israel, do your thing here. So I applied my Rousseau of tend your own garden and decided to try Aliyah. And I came to Israel and I've never really looked back. I've thought about it, but I'm pleased I'm here. Israel is has an aliveness that speaks to me, and maybe that's part of my activist in me. The American foot over foot life, everything is, there's something here that's so full of life that we have to deal with life and death. I come to a little story now. I was about to tell you a story about my cousin, but now I'm going to tell you a story about his mother. When I came back for a first visit, when I was maybe in my early late 20s or something, and I had this aunt in New York with these sons, and her second son had got brain cancer, and it was terrible. And she said to me, she sat there with me, this 50-year-older woman, and said, this is the first time I've ever met death. And I was there, this young, having made immigrated to Israel. And I said, what? In Israel, we deal with this all the time. So in Israel, we deal with the hard questions. It's not just a soft life. And I have great problems. I had problems before I ever came to Israel when my parents bought me four matching suitcases when I was 18. I said, what do I need four matching suitcases for? This is where I'm coming from. So I made Aliyah, and after a year, I decided to study psychology. And I went towards school psychology because I was an activist. I'd been pro-blacks in my I've been head of the NAACP, if you know what that is, in the United States when I was in high school. So, I was this liberal Jew. So I took school psychology to help make Israel a better place. And that's what I did. And I became a school psychologist and I got married and I had three children. And I set up a branch of a school psychology unit when I was 40. And then I moved on a bit, and I also went into developmental psychology. And then I set up a unit of developmental psychology. And then I reached my late 50s and early 60s, and I left my public job and I had a clinic, and I had more time because I had to retire at the age of at the age of 64. So, and that was when Women Wage Peace began, because we began as a spontaneous women's gathering, which turned into a movement, about 10 women
This was in
after
2014, was it not?
2014. Women, a bunch of women got together and said, this can't go on. These sevavim, I don't know, these rounds of going into Gaza, they attacked us, we respond, and then it's over. And we said, this is just, it needs to end. We need peace. So this group of Eyal Admi and a few others got together and said, became Women Wage Peace. And I went to a meeting here in Zichron quite early that first year, and became a member. And I was still working, and little by little, I've become more active. Does that give you a sense of who
Abel,
I am?
yes, it gives me a sense of who you are. It'll take me to my next question because my journey was slightly different in the sense that growing up in apartheid South Africa, violence was always part of life. It might not have affected me as a privileged white person, but it was in the greater environment, and you could see it with the black community. You could see the privilege of a white skin was very apparent. Although now I forget it and I need to remind myself because I'm out of that environment. And the thing that bothers me, especially when I look at the conflict you're living in, is how do you create a culture of peace within a community that has so much violence on a daily basis, whether it's barbed wires, that's subliminal, sirens, bombing, spontaneous checks by IDF or whoever's the security forces in the context? How do you create peace in a community that must have post-traumatic syndrome disorder, post, or, and it's not post-traumatic because it's continuous. How do you do it? And that is something that you must know a lot about because you're a psychologist.
Well, first of all, I need to, I think, make very clear to you and to whoever else is going to listen to this podcast that there are three groups here. And for instance, your situation, well, I won't compare. There are three groups. And the Israeli Arabs, who used to call themselves Israeli Arabs and today call themselves more Palestinian Arabs, some of them yes, some of them no, but they're Israeli citizens and they've been living in Israel as citizens with more or less equal rights. It's of course there's some discrimination and some people would say more than some, but still. They basically have, well, first of all, have political rights to vote, and they're part of our culture. It's a separate but not equal. But they're living in an Israeli environment. Yes, they go to separate schools because everything here, more or less, though we have a bunch of schools now that are called Hand in Hand, where Arab and Jewish children study together. Parents who are trying to create what you're talking about. But over the years, they go to our universities, an awful lot of the students at our universities. And in the last few years, particularly women, Arab women have, as women, you know, women kind of are more advanced, excuse me for saying, than men. So they tend to be better at academics. Anyway, we have, you know, all of our pharmacists are Arabs, and we have tremendous number of Arab. Our medical system would not work without Arabs. Because that was one direction they could go in. They can't really, it's harder for them to go into a high tech and so forth because of all the military relationships there. But they in the medical system, they're tremendously part of it. And of course, at lower levels, all the stores, everything is, so we have an awful lot of contact. And they imbibe Israeli culture. And they so that and there's a lot of tension, and we have a lot of organizations here who work on Arab-Jewish relationships within Israel. And they, the woman I was supposed to come to Cyprus with, was an Israeli Arab like that. She lives in Haifa, and she says, you know, I'm so different from my Palestinian even relatives who live on the West Bank because the so there's the Israeli Arabs who are somewhere in between culturally, between the Jewish Israeli and the Palestinian non-Israeli. And then there's the Palestinian, it's Palestinians, and they live in the West Bank or in Gaza. And when you talked about all the bad things that happened, it's mostly happening to those people, not to the
Yes,
Arabs.
I
All of
agree now.
so it's very important when we talk about this, to differentiate. And within Israeli society, as I say, there's a lot of groups working on being
Reconciliation.
together, reconciliation. It's not even reconciliation, but because we are, there are Israelis, it's seeing how much they identify with us and how we can make this a more joint and equal society. And I can give you names of people you might want to talk to. For instance, I mentioned before where we're not online, Standing Together, which who started as an organization to say that Jews and Arabs in Israel want the same things and let's stand together. And they have become more involved with Women Wage Peace, whose our main goal is bringing peace between Israel and Palestine. And or Israel at least not being at war with our neighbors, however you want to call it. And as time has gone on, these things overlap, but they're not the same. They were set up to work on internal Israeli relationships, and we were set up to work on the external. And the psychology that you asked started with that. Within Israel until this present war, it felt sort of under control, and it was okay, in my view, to do personal psychology. When this war broke out, I mean, my daughter said to me, "Well, why don't you go back and do psychology?" I said, "No, there's no." And I even wrote a letter to the New York Times, which didn't get published, to some Palestinian psychologist who talked about all the psychological problems in Gaza and the West Bank. And I said, "Well, we have them a tremendous amount as well. Not as bad, but
No, I agree. I agree. It's across the board.
it's
It's not,
across the board."
it's across the board.
And the story I was going to tell you before is about the son of this aunt of mine, whose name is Jonathan Cohen, and I love him dearly. And he's also a psychologist. He's probably my closest cousin because we're very similar. And he became a psychologist, and he teaches at Columbia University, or taught. He's now retired, and in private practice. And he has a very, very comfortable life, like the life I had when I was growing up. And last night we finally got in touch after 10 years of not talking a lot. And I wrote about the difference and how he's doing personal psychology 3 days a week. And I feel that the most important thing I can do now is help settle the conflict. How can you, this is what we need to do to get down to the personal level. The overall level is so traumatic.
Yes, it is.
Can't treat, in my view, trying to treat people individually that they've been through something specific when the whole system is traumatizing everybody, that so there's these two levels.
So
And
how do you treat, because I mean, I look at this conflict that is happening now in Israel, Palestine. I look at us that are trying to support in some way, or at least trying to get a ceasefire, because I think at some stage the killing has to stop. And I'm not talking about who's dying and who's not dying, because people are losing on both sides. And we are reliving it through all the videos that are going online.
you say that
Okay?
again? You are?
We are living it because we
Yeah.
see videos online, which is the effect of social media. And I'm thinking, how can you get the ceasefire to happen? And will the ceasefire is, and the ceasefire will only be a starting point, I'm assuming. Then what do you do?
I mean, I think that our government needs to cooperate more. There's an awful lot of people, mostly Joe Biden, who, in my mind, has been very supportive of Israel, is trying to toe both lines. He's trying to
Yes.
be humane, and yet he's trying to say that Israel does have the right to exist. And this is what this war is also about. And people, in my view, have somewhat forgotten in the world because the killing that's gone on in Gaza is horrible. It's also horrible what happened on the 7th of October. It's also, of course,
No, they're
horrible.
equally
And
horrible.
if
They're
we hadn't
equally horrible.
stopped it would have been much, much worse because it's much more personal than what Israel did. But the quantities of people in Gaza that are being killed are terrible. And but what needs to happen from this tragedy is some kind of peace agreement. And I think that there are what we can do, whether it's
As
me
women, we as
and
women.
as women and as people,
Okay.
is to push your government to support a balanced view of helping. I'm not saying only the Israelis are to blame because they aren't.
No. There's
Well,
blame on
but
both
there are too
sides.
many voices in the world at the moment. But we need to support those voices that say, this is a very complicated situation. Israel has a right to exist. So do the Palestinians have a right to exist without being killed. And they also have a right and a need for defining self-definition as a group of people. And therefore, the governments of the world and we as women need to push them to help push the world, to help push Israel and the Palestinians, which means replacing Hamas basically, and finding other Palestinians who are willing to say, "We're willing to live here with Israel. Israel has a right to exist." Because many people Even Arabs in Israel, when you push to shove, and even myself as a worried more, before this war, I think I was in some ways more partial to the Arabs because they were the underdog. And many Israelis have stayed there. I've moved a bit. And when you push, and I was considering what is better, a one state solution or two states? Because if we have one state and everybody has, lives together and in practice separation of religion and state, and we can all live together. We have to learn to live together. That's a, obvious thing.
Given.
But this war has kind of convinced me that it's not going to work for now. We need a two-state solution.
I must admit, I agree with you that at this stage, the tension is so high and so much has happened that you're living in La La Land if you think a one-state solution will work.
Yeah. So therefore,
But you still need to live together because you're neighbors.
that's that, and that's what we have to, as women, we have to say. And that's what we say with the women of the sun. We need to learn to find a way to live together. I don't know what their program is, if they have one in their head, but I can tell you that there was also a lot of tension within Israel when the war broke out between Jewish and Arab Israelis. Because in many ways, the Arab Israelis, and they would like one state, many of them, and I can understand them.
But
Not,
they can be given an option
Well,
of
no, it
say,
can't be, if
whether.
it's going to be two states, you can't give people that live within Israel. You can, if it's two states and this program that's one country for two people, you can let people pick whichever state they're going to belong to. And by the way, the going saying is that most Arab Israelis will pick to stay in
In
Israel,
Israel.
Israelis as citizens, some more happily, some less happily, but a lot of them very much want that. Because we are, for all our faults, a modern democratic society, and we are struggling to hold on to that. Not so easy because there are elements in our society which are not interested in that or which are fundamental. And there
Well,
are even.
I think that's the biggest, one of the biggest problems in Israel is that preceding October the 7th, there was a very strong internal conflict in terms of leadership.
There still
And
is.
yes, I mean, it's been masked now by, not most,
It hasn't been
overwhelmed
masked.
now.
It's not being masked. It's very deep, and it's
But it's
yes.
not visible. Is it still visible as much because of the level of the conflict?
Yes, it to us it is. It's interesting to know that you from abroad don't see it so much because yes, all these people that were saying we might not go and serve in the army if a year ago, because of the attempt to change the judicial system. When October 7th happened, they all ran to serve. So we were very, but, and when they're, but underneath now, we have a lot of demonstrations that are anti the government. And there's a large, and it pains the right wing people tremendously. How can you now be standing up and saying you don't want Bibi and hostages at any price? It's not very much under the surface anymore. And
So there's
It's
still a lot of dissent
wow.
within Israel itself about the attempt to make less democratic this Jewish state.
Say that again. Well, I didn't hear the first
And
thing.
so you're saying in Israel, it's still very apparent the lack of the move to try and make the Jewish state less democratic, because that was the battle pre-October the 7th.
Yes.
Bibi was under a lot of pressure and probably still is, because he was trying to make changes to the judicial system, as you said.
Many, many Israelis who are against Bibi, feel that what is running him is these very right-wing people without with whom he doesn't have a coalition, and therefore he's doing very right-wing things to the detriment of the general population.
I know. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, even within the context of this conflict, of what role the fragility of Bibi's coalition played.
Yeah. And there's a lot
And
of
his personal, not safety, the fact that he was also up for indictment. and possibly
Right,
going to
right.
be.
There are lots of Israelis that think that hate Bibi, and who feel that this has been handled all wrong because of Bibi's personal need to stay in power.
Yes, I know. And one never knows. I mean, I'm sure he is playing a role, but he's anyway, the point is we now have a conflict. What can we as women do? What can we do? Because and it's something we discussed before we started recording. I really think, because as I said earlier, I'm a member of Hands Across the Divide. When I moved to Cyprus in 2000, and my first job was on a newspaper, and within 2 or 3 months there was a meeting organized by the British Council of what women can do in divided communities, to which Israeli and Palestinian women were invited, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Irish, and out of that, Hands Across the Divide was born, and I joined the system. Not the system, I joined this movement because it was easier for me to talk about women's rights rather than the conflict, because I just arrived. I didn't want to step on anyone's toes, and I didn't know enough. But our organization is different to yours in that we have won, even though we are divided by a green line. And the reason it's a green line is because some British soldier only had a green pen and he marked a green line.
Well, we call it the green line too, because we have
Yes.
beyond the green line. I mean, what I call Israel proper is from the green line, same English thing, I think. And beyond is the West Bank and Gaza.
So,
So
but
we work. Listen, I mean, I think,
I mean,
and I'm
we've got
trying.
to, we've got two communities, but we work as one organization. We have one board. We have a board that has a mix of Turkish Cypriot and Greek Cypriot. We alternate. If the president is Greek Cypriot, the vice president is Turkish Cypriot. This is the first year we have a Turkish Cypriot president, and the reason we haven't had one before is for practicality. Because in the Greek Cypriot side, where we registered, you've got to be able to speak Greek in terms of signing documents or answering emails. Now we've changed the system because we have a really dynamic young Turkish Cypriot woman. So maybe now is the opportunity to see if maybe the three of us can come together and have a webinar to see how we can support each other. I'm really this thing of listening to you now. Because the things are there things that, of course, there are things I didn't know that you told me about. There are things you didn't know. And if we can come together and support each other in some way, because I was meeting last week and I'm not going to identify, and this question of Palestine was being discussed. And I was saying to him, why are we buying into the warmongering narrative? Why are we not saying to our governments, stop buying bloody weapons, stop selling it, stop trading in guns? Why are we not taking, you're not going to change the narrative, but you've got to change the way you frame the narrative. You've got to work towards peace and not feed the narrative of who wins and who loses, because we're all losing. In any conflict, there are no winners. This question, I mean, in this, someone mentioned that the Palestinians are victims because Israel's winning the war. And I said, you know what? Israel's not winning the war.
We
People are
lost.
dying.
We lost.
No,
We
but
lost.
even no, but
We lost
even
the
in this,
war on the first day.
no, but
We're
even in
trying to
this,
get our pride back, a male pride. We're trying to get our male pride back. But
but
we
even
lost
in the.
this war. We were attackable. We were killed in horrible ways, and we lost the war that day. And I think, in a psychological way, much of, and I feel it myself. I mean, we were this country that in 1967, and I think, we win wars. We are the strong Israeli. We lost, and we're trying to show the Palestinians that we're strong and that we win, but there's really no way to win
No,
except.
but that's what I said to this young woman. She's a young woman. I said, you know what? In war, no one wins. It might appear that Israel has got the stronger army and seems to be making better inroads, but no one's winning this war because people are dying. There's a spread of PTSD across the area. People are always under attack or always feel insecure. People have been displaced. The Israelis, possibly not as much, and definitely not as much as the
But have
Palestinians.
been, by the way. We don't,
But
nobody talks about it. But there's 100,000 Israelis, at least, that can't go back to their homes in the north and they're being bombed, and in the South.
No, but that's what
And
I'm
we don't
saying. I
take
said to him,
care of them. We put them up in hotels. I had some people from the North stay with me for a little bit, all the whole, and we take care of them. But we have more resources, and it's not as many people, of course, but
No,
we
but
have.
that's what I'm saying, that Israel, in inverted commas, appears to be winning because there are more resources available. But I was, and fortunately, this was a young woman, and I was playing the role of an elder. And I said, you know what, in wars, no one wins. So resources, more resources, people are still dying. I mean, I happened to listen about 2 weeks after October 7th, I listened to a recording of a webinar of high-level Israeli women, international lawyers, first responders, etc., talking about receiving the woman of October the 7th and the state of the bodies and the injuries. I stopped it in the middle. I actually couldn't listen anymore. I wanted to be physically ill. So I think this, how do we pass on this message of no one wins in a war? This male thing of I've got a gun, I can shoot, and I appear to be winning is crap.
Well, that's what Women Wage Peace has said from the very beginning. And I mean, that was immediately what we said. And we say one thing: only a negotiated peace will bring well-being, and women should be more involved in the process. Those are the two things we've been saying for 10 years and working at. Now, how do we do it? We do it on, I think, on both the level of trying to, for instance, working through the parliament, where we went for a long time and had meetings with different politicians, demonstrating, of course. But we also work and media now, but we also work at the more grassroots level. And actually, perhaps as a psychologist, that's where I found my niche. Within Women Wage Peace, talking to people, that's discussing. And I've been instrumental in setting up. We have a group in my town with ultra-Orthodox women, which you probably don't know. Those are the very, the people who
Hasidic
don't serve in
Jews.
the army, basically, who don't serve in the army. And so we've just got a discussion group. And the thing that I'm and another discussion group that I'm very involved in that we has been going now for a year or two is with settler women. And we have a group through Women Wage Peace, a dialogue group with women who live in the settlements, and they happen to be women, not liberal one, but from the right wing. I mean, people that voted probably for Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. These are very hardcore settler women. And we have a discussion group. Now, it's taken us a year to get to the point. We worked on personal relationships. So first of all, see each other as human beings. And many right-wing women and many of the Women Wage Peace women won't want to be in the groups, but there's a central group that is interested. And we've brought it to the point now. We are discussing the most basic issues of what should be here and what are morals and what is a conflict and what is a place for Arabs. And I mean, the hardest things, we can talk about it. So that I think that as women, one of the things we can do is dialogue groups. And 10 years ago, when I joined Women Wage Peace, I really felt that it was quite futile to work from above to below because it seemed totally stuck. So I said, I'm going to work. My thing is going to be working from below up, and that's sort of what I've taken upon myself to do and which I'm most involved in now. The war has created a situation where I think we have an opportunity, as horrible as it is, to create some kind of settlement. And therefore, as women, we also need to be political. It's not enough. We need to work not only from bottom up, but we also need to try and influence top down. And if I can say something small that I did a couple of weeks ago, right after the Iranian attack, which I think was very had a large impact, because I think that our wonderful response, with the help of the world, gave us some of our pride back. No, I'm telling you, it's important. Our feeling of, which makes it's easier to be nice to the other people if you're feeling in control and not so threatened. It's
Yes, and not so insecure.
very, very insecure. This war is about, and the Hamas say they want to destroy Israel and all the Jews. The world needs to listen to that. It's not just about the poor Palestinians and their need for self-definition. This is about getting rid of the Jews as well. And it's terrible. Anyway, the Iranian attack showed our power and our brains and our power and whatever. And so on Monday, I said, we have to be in the streets on almost every Saturday night. There's people demonstrating. I said, we have to be with signs on Saturday night saying no to a continual asthma.
Intensifying
What's the word?
intensifying or
Out of the war, and yes, for joint some kind of peace agreement, some kind of, and so there we were out on Saturday night with these new signs, and they got a lot of attention, and people are now starting to talk about it's much more prominent now. Basically, the peace agreement is Biden. I mean, everybody's talking about something along those lines, and the right-wing government is saying no, there'll be no Palestinian state. I mean, that's the so but there's been a debate in Israeli society, and Women Wage Peace has been part of the group of influencers. And when I see that we at the beginning of the war we came out with our sign saying security equals peace, peace equals security. Now that's a game changer.
Yes.
And other organizations started to be with the same signs. It's moving into people's heads and realizing that you can't just win by military prowess. You must, in the end, the real winning here is some kind of agreement and peace agreement or security agreement. And it's easier to narrow to talk about a security agreement because there's really not going to be peace for another 40 years. So let's talk about security agreements.
And I
And
think we also need to include in that word security, not just the lack of, we need to include the gender perspective of security because it's not just putting down your guns, it's actually making sure people are safe, jobs are safe,
of course,
bodies are safe.
but the reason I joined Women Wage Peace and I didn't do something else when these wonderful years, I guess, of post working was because for Israel, the problem that if it is not solved, we can't have all the good things that a democratic free society should have, is if we don't solve the problem with the Palestinians, we can't really have the society we'd like to have. So for me, that's the first level and the most important level. Once we can get that solved, we can worry more about social
Details.
problems and education and psychology and jobs and all the other things that.
I think to me, one of the biggest, most difficult things to solve in the conflict in your area is how do you separate Hamas from the Palestinians? Because not every Palestinian is a Hamas supporter. Hamas was voted in 2006. When were they voted in? And since then, there have not been democratic elections. And not everyone is a Hamas supporter, although the violence tends to create people that want more violence. So, how do you separate this? Not all Palestinians are Hamas, yet the
It's very,
Palestinians are.
first of all, it's very difficult. And by the way, there's been research since the war. The support for Hamas on the West Bank is 70, 80%. So
But
it's,
Joe,
let me just, no, but
I'm
what I'm
not
saying,
surprised. I'm not surprised because of the violence.
right. But but as a psychologist, and I say, just like I think you're indicating, that the first step to help people become want less violence is to make some kind of non-violence as a basic way they can live. You have to stop the violence. Now, at the same time, of course, you have to work from bottom up and have talk differently. I think one of the main things is education, of course.
Absolutely.
From what we know in Palestinian schools, the anti-Israeli, anti-Jewish textbooks are dominant. I must admit, at the beginning of the war, I was sent a little clip from one of my settler friends, who were always, of the final party in a Gazan nursery school. And what was the play they put on? Killing Israelis. That was, for me, a moment of change. It's like, I really, this is mostly what they're being taught. And we have reports now. Every home has, there's all kinds of reports of things in the home showing that they identify with this. So, but I think people can change. And therefore, we need to have part of the peace agreement or security agreement is to talk about what's going to be in the textbooks. And we need to, first of all,
Absolutely.
like I said before, we need to have leaders, Palestinian leaders, who will agree that their purpose is to live next to Israel, not instead of. Now, that has to be, as far as Israel is concerned, and I think it
The
should be something
prerequisite.
that a requisite for as a Cypriot or as an American, whoever you are, as a woman, saying this is a requisite, and we support the Israeli demand that the Palestinians who will be running Palestine will be people who agree that Israel has a right to exist. And from there we go. And of course, then the educational system and all kinds of cooperation and cooperation.
I'll never forget. My son was, he started school here where I moved from Greece. He started school here, and I think it was first grade or second grade. And I was driving home from school. He says to me, "Mommy, what did we do the Turks and they occupied half our land?" And I said to him, "You know what? Things," and I mean, I had to explain it to a 7, 8 year old. I said, "You know what? Things don't just happen. Something happened before, and something happened before that, and they changes, they chains." And so I said, "We did something before, then they did something before. So this is not what happened to us. Okay, this is part of a bigger context." I don't know how much he understood. He's better than what he. I mean, it was a challenge for me because I had a son in the system. But this is what they teach them, that we are the victims. This happened to us. We had no role in it. We were sitting there quietly and happily and inclusively and being inclusive, and some this victimhood. So they did it in all our school books. When
I
you're
this
in
thing of victimhood is something that I is very important to me to bring. I think the problem the Palestinians have taken upon themselves, in my view, it's a victimhood state of mind ever since the Jews came here. And I think that this is basic problem, and they need, they are part of the problem. This did not Israel accepted, I hate to go back to accepted two states in 1947. It was the Palestinians that didn't. So now we're fighting another 75 years along. And the right wing here says, who says that if we now give them a Palestine, the world gives them a Palestinian state, it'll be enough for them. And it's not an illogical thing to say. And the Palestinians, I need to think, to take more responsibility. For what's happened, and look, one of the nice things that Women of the Sun say, and this is more or less where they're at. Reem says, "I want my son to grow up and be something. I don't want him to dedicate his life to dying." Because this is what they're taught now, and the revolutionary thing of Women of the Sun is teaching women, no, you want your children to grow up to be
To live.
doctors and engineers and have lives. And therefore, we have to make some kind of settlement. But that is the mindset. I mean, you will hear Palestinian, they're glad this dying is being some, it's a martyr and you're doing something. And And
They're
instead
supposed
of,
to, how many virgins are waiting for them on the other side?
I don't know.
No, but I agree
But
with you. A
this is
lot
what,
of
you know,
them,
this
I agree
martyr.
with you. We've got to teach our children that they mustn't die for their country. They must live for their country or their community. They've got to create circumstances where they live, where there's a
But I
future.
think this thing of victimhood is also very, very basic. The world has now accepted this, the Palestinians are the victims. And this could have been very, very, very different. And we need to hear from the Palestinians that they're moderate and that they want to get along with us too. Because we're here to stay and they're here to stay. And therefore, we all deserve, you know, to live and bring up our children to do good things in the
Yeah.
world. But I think this is a very, very basic problem. This thing of being the victim and not taking responsibility on both sides for the things that each side has done incorrectly. And it's a very basic problem.
I agree with you because I think each side has got to take responsibility for mistakes that have been made along the way. Because no one is without mistakes. What I said earlier, there are no winners and losers in this game, in this not game, this con. Everyone's a loser. Everyone has lost. Everyone has lost. So we've got to step back and say, what can I do differently? What can I do differently? Because we both occupy the same area. So we both have a right. We both occupy the same area and we both want the same thing. We want our children to have a future. I think that might be a good point to end on, unless you have anything else you would like to say.
I mean, I'm sure we could continue on it for another 4 hours, but I also
No,
was feeling this kind of, unless you have another question that you
no,
wanted to
no.
ask me. I don't know if you covered everything, but
We can't cover everything. As you said,
right.
if we covered everything, we would be here for days. So I think we all, I think that's our one of our main roles is women in these areas to actually ensure that we step out of this victimhood. I can't bear this victimhood in whatever context I'm living, and make sure our children grow up and believe, honestly believe, that they have a right to be there, not to the exclusion of anyone else, but next to someone else.
I think this is one of the great things of Women of the Sun, of Rim, who I think started out very victim-like. I mean, she's from Dehesa. She doesn't, you know, there's no light in her house. I mean, because the buildings are so close together. And but she's taken, done something and gotten up and said, I'm a strong woman and I'm gonna change something. And that's leaving the victim role and it's being a leader. And I think it's changed her head on. Hope she's getting a following. And I think maybe what we should be doing, you know, you from the very beginning said, well, let's maybe do a Zoom. So maybe what we should do to do something more practical and maybe get to more people than just the two of us and whoever is listens to your podcast and has the patience for this whole hour would be to organize a Zoom with your organization and both women of the Women Who Age Peace and Women Who Age Sun. It's more complicated with them. You need to translate. What it can be worked out.
Do all of them speak? Do none of them speak English?
There are some. There are some. Rim
Does
speaks,
re
but there are some that speak English. So.
No, I agree because I think I'll ask someone to help me reach out to Women of the Sun. And the biggest challenge was, does she need to be English speaking? And for this kind of podcast, yes, she does. And translation is always an issue because in Cyprus, there's Turkish and Greek. And a lot of the time, not everyone has English as a first language or even a good second language, which means things get lost in translation unless you get translation in, and then you're asking for a lot of money. Anyway,
Yeah.
you and I will find,
Well,
we'll
so
see
what
what
do you
we can
think we
do.
should go here? You can maybe turn off the recording now because this is technical.
Okay,
And
so
the chat,
to
but we can just.
I just want to say thank you for being with me. I've really learned a lot. I
Oh,
think
good.
our final message, not of our message should always be as women, is we have to try and change our mindset and of the people around us. Not change it, move it, shift it, till we all have a right to be where we are, but we have a right to be where we are next to the people next to the people around us,
They
not
have
in
rights as well.
exactly. So thank you, Joe, and thank you to the listeners. And to everyone, stay safe.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.